Oh, hi, podcast listeners. There's many ways you can listen to the Real Nerds Podcast. You can subscribe on iTunes. You can also subscribe on Stitcher Radio. You want to send us a Twitter message? You can do that. It's so easy, at Real Nerds. Like us on Facebook, Real Nerds Podcast. You can visit our website, realnerdspodcast.com, where there'll be a lot of articles for you to not only read, but to listen to our previous shows. Do you like your stories told through pictures? Then you can also follow us at Real Nerds on Instagram. You can also call us, 720-6NERDS5. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Camera, action!
Well, a real nerd knows who shot, and a real nerd can follow the plot, and a real nerd
doesn't
can...
Doesn't talk film! I'm sorry.
Take it outside.
Well, a real nerd knows who shot, and a real nerd can follow the plot, and a real nerd will give it all they got. Lights, camera, action!
Hey, all you crazy real nerds. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Real Nerds Podcast. Every week, we see a new movie and we podcast our experience to the world. I'm Ryan, and I am joined, as always, by my buddy for over 25 years, Brad. How are you today?
This friendship ends tonight.
Fuck!
I knew it. Yeah, I'm good. Just getting excited about making some movie stuff.
Yeah, what are you making?
So we've been working on the Esquire movie.
Correct.
And haven't shot a lot of scenes because over the holidays I just didn't want to bother anyone with it. But now things are picking up, and like we're going to shoot this mansion, and we have this house party scene we're going to do, and there's just like a lot of props and stuff I have to get together.
Very
and
cool. So
shot list to make. And
in case this is someone's first podcast of ours on our 600th and something episode, 89? How many episodes?
No, it's like 670, I think.
670? What is the Esquire, and why are you making this film?
So last year, around January, we were informed that the Esquire would be closing halfway through the year, and that's a place I hung out on weekends quite frequently to see movies. One of the early adopters of cinema...
Stream.
Which isn't a joke that comes out for a few weeks.
Yeah. In 2 weeks, this will be really funny.
Yeah. But yeah, it's going to close down, and it's like a 97-year-old theater. Really great place to watch stuff. Before that, I was like, someday I'm going to make a movie and film it at the Esquire. But I wasn't ready, so I threw together like a really dumb script.
So is this a documentary, or is it a narrative that plays as a documentary?
It's a narrative that homages real aspects of the theater.
Very cool.
So,
I mean, that's really where my love for midnight movies started years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember when they showed the Evil Dead trilogy at midnight and how packed it was, and we had to line up around the block to get in. You know, just memories like that. That now that movies have kind of moved away from midnight screenings, you know, it's all the big movies now start at 3 p.m. on Thursday. I mean, the movie we saw this week, Captain America, Brave New World, it starts screening early on Thursday. And then, you know, the last screening on Thursday is, I don't know, 9:30 at night. And the bummer is we've been doing this for so long that, I mean, the real one of the reasons why we don't have midnight screenings anymore is because of the Aurora Theater shooting. And
because the time was the problem.
Yeah, I know. And not so bad. Anyways, but yeah, but that's, you know, so that element has gone. And then now that the Esquire is gone too, it feels like a part of our film soul has like left.
Yeah. Even after the shooting, like the Esquire still did midnights.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then after the pandemic, like they scaled back to 10 PM. So yeah,
it doesn't seem like it's unique anymore. You know, I didn't see episode one at midnight, but I did see it at 6:30 in the morning that Friday. And they don't even do that anymore because, I mean, now there's so many screens. But, I mean, we've all had experiences where a movie we wanted to see. I mean, I remember seeing Spider-Man 1 and it lining up all the way to Radio Shack from Denver West. And that
movie going experience is gone. And that's awesome that you're doing a movie based on it, because, you know, that kind of gelled for me for appreciation of older films in theater at the Esquire. And, you know, I remember, you know, thinking it was cool if it was being shown upstairs.
Yeah, it was a cool place to, like, go back and feel like you're watching a movie like your elders did.
Yeah, yeah, and it's weird because, you know, it didn't have the stadium seating, but it had, I mean, it had staggered seating, but not how we know it now. And there's something about the popcorn there, and it's, I don't know.
Best popcorn in the world, yeah. So many formulative experiences happened there. Like, I was introduced to the room there.
And you took me to the room there, one of the last screenings, and...
Yeah. I met Tommy Wiseau there many times.
Yeah, and it's the thing where if I didn't see the room there, I probably would have hated the movie.
Oh, yeah.
But when you're there and people are saying jokes, and because I'm also a person that says I hate when people talk in movies, but that it's such a community there and you need that in that movie or it is going to be awful.
And I, for years, didn't take advantage of the Rocky Horror Picture Show there, but it's another one of those communal experiences where, like, if I watched it at home, I'm like, eh, it's okay.
Yeah.
But, like, watching other people have fun with it and, like, produce their own theatrical version of it as the movie's playing, I was like, that's pretty impressive. And the fact that they did it, like, every month for, like, 20 years.
Yeah, it's... So, yeah, that's cool that you're doing something to keep it alive, because you also have a website where you just have posters that you salvaged from there.
Yeah.
But it's going to be more. But right now, you have so much going on that it'll eventually build up.
Yeah, I don't get paid for this shit, so
yeah.
I can't be in a rush to get all these posters cataloged and program a website to sell them to you. So,
but eventually, you know, it's but it's cool that someone like you is keeping it alive. So, yeah.
And I'm not going to make money from that. Like, you're going to donate to get the posters, and then that's going to go to arts people who need it.
Yeah, I guess I should say it's a .org. It's not a not a .com. It's not a commerce thing. It's to donate to the arts in Denver film. So,
if you're hoping to find that really rare 90s international film poster, I got it.
Sweet. Keep it up, Brad. That's awesome.
Thanks.
This week we saw Captain America: Brave New World. We'll recommend the film or not, play the trailer, and then spoil the movie. We'll also talk about movies we watch throughout the week. We're a movie podcast. It's what we do. It's funny. When I was talking to some of my workmates, and then you realize that we've been doing this for 14 years, and the relationships we've made at cons and with artists, and now in my new house, I'm able to, you know, display my George's Genti artwork and the open, and
which, dude, I'm so sorry about your commission work.
Oh, bro. I'll tell you it's not a funny story, but it'll be a long story. So, if you look over on the far corner here, Brad, I have my Mortal Kombat shrine. And so Chad Harden, who drew Harley Quinn and a bunch of other, he's actually doing the covers for Edge of Spider-Verse right now and helped. Actually, I hope he comes to Fan Expo this year, because I really want to ask him. So Marvel is resurrecting the original Gwen Stacy, and she's coming back as a hybrid of Wolverine and Deadpool that she got mixed with adamantium. And she's, I don't know what they're doing. They're trying to ruin my childhood. But he designed the character or the costume, so he did the first cover for it. So I'm interested. So anyways, he's one of my favorite artists. His art is stunning. He's always so cool. He remembers me because I have him draw something that he doesn't draw. It's Mortal Kombat. When I first met him, it was at the mini one they did in October right after COVID. And I sent him from Mortal Kombat 11 to do Cetrion because he does a really cool Poison Ivy. And Cetrion from Mortal Kombat has vines and stuff. I said, you know what? I bet he'd do really cool with that. And in this is a little helpful hint for people that do commission art. If you get people to do stuff they don't normally do, a lot of times they might go the extra mile because it as an artist, it's cool.
Stimulating, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, he's a great Harley Quinn artist, and his Harley Quinn is awesome. But how many times has he drawn Harley Quinn, Joker, and Poison Ivy? So I just sent it. I said, Cetrion from Mortal Kombat. And I did, because he's such a great artist, you know, and I'm married, I can't do the $500 commission. So I did, I think the Headbus inked is $150, which I don't think is that bad. So that's what I picked. And I picked Cetrion. And I remember at the show, I went to his booth. It's run by his wife and him. And I talked to him and he said, man, Ryan, I got to tell you, she's a really cool character and I really enjoy drawing her. So he upgraded my picture for free. He added colors, and it's awesome. And the next year he didn't have any spots open to do colors because it takes a lot of time. So he did a pencil Cassie Cage for me. And then the following year he was at Colorado Springs and I had to do Scarlet. So anyways, long story, even longer. This company,
okay, Adrian Brody.
I know, right?
We'll find out in 2 weeks.
This company named Zoop, which is a lot like Kickstarter, is you back projects by comic artists. And Chad Hardin happened to have his new art book on there. So for $150, you got the art book and a commissioned piece. So I picked Kung Lao, my favorite character from Mortal Kombat. And I did this last March. It was supposed to come out in July last year. Nothing. And it's kind of disappointing because on Kickstarter, you get an update about once a week. You know, they'll say, hey, we ran into a production problem or the art isn't quite ready yet. I mean, a perfect example is I donated to this hand-drawn Mega Man guide where this guy literally draws every level of Mega Man and it's a strategy guide. And it was only $50. I'm like, sweet. And that's coming out in like 2 months. But anyways, so nothing. So I sent him an email in November and I said, hey, what's going on with this? You guys totally charged me $167 and I'm just curious. And they said, oh yeah, we're running behind and blah, blah, blah. We're going to start sending them out in a couple weeks. Well, it got into December. Nothing. And then just before Christmas, Chad put out on his Facebook a reel. And on the reel, he said, hey, I apologize for the delay, but I upgraded everybody's commission. So if you got the commission tier, you got an upgrade. And then he ran a slideshow of all the commission work he did. And my Kung Lao is in there and my name's on the bottom. And so instead of just ink and pencil, he fully colored it. And I mean, not just a couple colors. I mean, the Kung Lao I got was gold and black and blue, and it was amazing. And so I was like, sweet. And he said, I sent them all to Zoop. You should be getting the shipping information really soon. Then about another 3 weeks went by, and Zoop's finally came back, says, hey, we're going to start sending you stuff next week. This is the middle of January. And you'll get an update of where your stuff's going to be. Then about a month went by, and it was nothing. So I sent them another email. I said, hey, you guys aren't responding to my email, the last one I sent you. Where is my stuff? Because I've spent all this money. You said it was going to go out on Monday. It's been 27 days, and I'm still waiting. And it was a really mean email. And then
you updated your address, right?
Yeah. And then the president of the company emailed me back and he says, oh, we're really sorry. We don't know what happened to yours, Ryan. We're going to look into it. I'll let you know really soon.
Some due to the fact we thought it was really cool.
Yeah. Then another week went by and he said, then I got another email and they said, hey, I'm waiting for the warehouse to get back to me. Then another week went by and he said, it turns out that, yours and a couple other commissions have gone missing and we're trying to work to resolve the problem. And then about another week went by and they said, hey, we shipped your book, but we don't have your commission. And Chad is going to send you an email and work with you to get you a new one. So I got my book. It's not signed, which I was supposed to have. I literally got the book. And in my whole long rant of this is, it's not really fair to the artist because he already drew it and he gave it to you guys, and now it's missing, and so now you're going to tell him he has to draw it again? So I don't even know what to do with that. I mean, and it's not Chad Harden's fault.
Yeah.
And so now he's going to have to draw another one for not just me. So that means they lost a couple other ones too. And am I the first person that's like, hey, what the fuck? And so it's really disappointing.
Yeah. Like, they already took your money, and their solution wasn't like, oh, well, we'll just give you the money back at least, and then Chad doesn't have to do it. But they're like, no, we want to keep the money, and we're going to make Chad do it again.
Exactly. And, you know, and it's not Chad's fault, but it makes him look bad too.
I mean, he chose the company, but he probably won't for a future thing for sure.
I hope not, because, and it's just really disappointing. And then how am I supposed to, I don't know, in my head, it sounds pretty mean to email Chad Harden and say, hey, where's my commission? I know that he put the stretch goals or the tiers or whatever you call it on there, but it's not his fault that it went missing. So I've resigned to myself to the fact that I'll never get a Kung Lao until I order it from him directly or whatever. So yeah, that's my really long story.
Yeah.
And it took me a year to get the book and
unsigned.
And for me to like raise hell, because they didn't even say anything to me. Like they like act like they didn't know. Like, how do you not know that these weren't sent out? What is your, how do you keep track of stuff? And so if he sends it to your company and then you have a warehouse that sends it, isn't there a person in the middle says, because I, like I said, I've seen the picture and on the bottom it has my name. So if he gets the commissioned work, he goes, oh, this goes with Ryan's stuff in the box and they send it out. It doesn't seem like it's that complicated.
Unless, like I said, some packager was like, this is too cool. I got to keep this.
Probably because
I get paid like $7 an hour. Fuck these people.
Yeah. Because, you know, I think he only had like 10 or 15 for the commission available because he can't do, you know,
100 plus
of them, because this effort he puts into them is just impossible because he has a real job. So they only have so many available. So, yeah, so I'm not happy.
I guess at least if you take the book to the next con, he'll just sign it for
you. Yeah, and that's what I'm going to do. I'm obviously going to bring it when I see him again and say, hey, yeah, they lost my Kung Lao.
Yeah. Don't use this company anymore.
Yeah, and then just have him sign my book, which he would probably do anyways, but because he's really nice. You should listen to our interview with him. He's a really fun guy. That was one that I didn't even know I was going to get an interview with him. I'll never forget this one, because when I got my Cassie cage, I went over and his wife says, oh, you should have him on your show. And I said, if he wants to. And he says, how about right now? I said, okay. And we had lots of fun. And then when I did Colorado Springs, was really, really fun because Amanda Connor and Jimmy Palmiotti were there and they're friends. And so my Scarlet, he also upgraded on it with the skull that has like the blood being sucked out of it, because Jimmy told him that it needs to be cooler. So he kind of added to it. And I adore Amanda Connor, and they were such nice people. They actually remembered me. And when I got her art book there, the people in front of me, she would just sign it. And then for mine, there is a page in there, because, you know, they usually have like a blank page and they would sign it. And then on mine, Jimmy did a sketch of Painkiller Jane and signed it. And then Amanda took it and she flipped into the book, and there's a part where there's this pinup girl sitting at a TV, and she drew in the TV, I love Ryan, and then she signed it. So it's really cool. So stuff like that means a lot to me. Because, you know, I'll never sell it or anything. That's something for me. And when we met her the first time, like 7 or 8 years ago, when I got her art book there, she found another like scantily clad woman in her art book. And she put a little word bubble in it, and it said, I love Ryan because he likes to screw. And she drew a picture of a screw. I'm like, yeah, I like Amanda Connor. So, yeah, anyways, that's my long comic book.
That sucks.
Yeah.
Sorry.
What are you going to do, right? This week, we saw Captain America, Brave New World. I forget, it went through like 3 name changes. I always want to say New World Order, but it's Brave New World. Brad, do you recommend the 4th adventure of Captain America?
Not really. I was pretty bored. I mean, it's still a good movie as Marvel movies can be, but like, I don't know. If you hadn't seen the Falcon and Winter Soldier show, I think you'd be really lost. And then, yeah, just like nothing was really that engaging. And it's like another movie where it doesn't like connect to a lot of stuff. So, yeah, I was kind of like, meh.
I had a lot of fun with the movie and I enjoyed it. But to your point, did you see it at the Alamo?
No.
When I went to the Alamo and I took my buddy and my wife, you know, they usually do, you know, previously on Spider-Man. For this one, they had previously on Captain America and the Winter Soldier. And it was about 15 minutes long to the character names, what they were doing, how it's connected. And as I was watching, I go, oh, man, you really need to be well-versed in this. Because this is not a standalone movie. And now when you see that, it makes sense that Disney kind of dialed that back a lot.
It definitely felt like a movie that had been edited a bunch.
Yeah. I really enjoyed it. I think you should see it. The last little bit of criticism I'll give it before we get into the trailer and spoilers. It is the first Marvel movie where I could pick out the pickup shots. Because some of the lighting didn't match. And when I read an interview with a director, I guess there's a whole other part of the movie with a Serpent Society that they completely cut from the film. And then they just put in Giancarlo Esposito's Sidewinder instead.
Also, the big thing is like the movie. I know the movie's short for Marvel standards, but like just sitting there and watching it, it felt like it was in a rush to get over with.
Yeah.
So of itself.
Yeah. So here's a trailer for Captain America: Brave New World.
You asked for me. Here I am.
You want to help me?
Is there anything you remember?
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States, Thaddeus Ross.
Whatever this is, Cap, be careful.
What do we know?
There were 5 shooters. This was a coordinated terrorist attack, sir.
I was a wartime general. Now I'm a wartime president.
Your inner circle's been compromised. Let me fix it.
Watch yourself. You're not Steve Rogers.
You're right.
I'm not.
Wait for it.
We're on the brink of war.
I can't trust anyone.
Nothing about this feels right.
Captain America. You ever ask yourself, who's playing who?
Someone's been pulling the strings on everything.
You're under arrest?
I don't want a variable out there that I can't control.
Stop!
Captain America caught without his wing.
You'd like to play dress up and blindly execute the state's orders.
Don't say I didn't warn you.
What if this is a trap?
You don't even know what this is.
Since when were they red?
You want me? Come and get me!
Sam Wilson is Captain America, which we learned at the end of Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Which I actually really love that moment in that show when he breaks through the window on the building and they play the Captain America theme. I thought was really, really cool.
Yeah, the whole opening sequence was actually pretty strong.
Oh, yeah.
Chasing Sidewinder down and stuff.
Yeah, and it definitely, they took a lot from The Winter Soldier, which I think is one of the best Marvel movies, where it's, you know, and it seems like the Captain America movies have leaned towards political thrillers, whether it's you know, Winter Soldier, even Civil War, because you're dealing with the Sokovia Accords, and even this movie is still dealing with the fallout of it. And then, you know, you move into this film, and it was definitely a political thriller, and it was an interesting take, because, I mean, Harrison Ford as Thaddeus Ross was great, taking over for the late, great William Hurt, who he passed away, what, 3 or 4 years ago? And in this, he wants to have Sam Wilson reform the Avengers. And it's an interesting take, especially for someone who fought so hard to
control the Avengers
and disband them.
Yeah.
And his motivation starts to come through throughout the film. And what I thought was a really cool twist on it is, I mean, the trailer and how you feel going in is that, you know, Thunderbolt Ross wants to be the Red Hulk, and he's using this as, 'cause he was an antagonist for the Avengers for the first 10, 15 years of this franchise. And in this one, it feels like he's understands what he's done wrong, and he's trying to make amends. So it's more of a sympathetic character. And I thought Harrison Ford was really great in it. I mean, I'll see anything with Harrison Ford. He just has this presence on screen that I just gravitate towards.
I like how they made a big deal about him not having the mustache. And then in the movie, he has the mustache for like some video archive footage scene. And it's like, why did they have to like take it off at all? Like,
yeah,
they have to make this throwaway line of like, oh, I had to shave it off because I have to get elected. It scored low points or something. It's like, he was fine wearing the stash for that archive footage.
So Thunderbolt Ross is elected president. It kind of picks up with him accepting the nomination and then winning the presidency. And I did like in Falcon and the Winter Soldier, the first super soldier, Isaiah
Bradley.
Yeah. Is really cool. And he has kind of a cool arc in this, because in it, he attempts to assassinate Ross as the president, that puts the peace talks of the adamantium that they found in the celestial island that the Japanese actually found first, because obviously for comic book people, adamantium makes the Wolverine skeleton indestructible. So it busts it up, and then Sam and the new Falcon, played by I forget the actor's name, but his name's Joaquin in the movie. You know, they kind of work with SEAL Team 6 to help alleviate terroristic threats throughout the world. Anthony Mackie's really great in it. I think he gives a great performance. I believe him as Captain America, and I believe that he wants to do good. And I mean, that's a big mantle to carry. And, you know, as I watch these movies, as Marvel is struggling, is a strong word, but I think it's having trouble finding its footing when it's lost people like Captain America and Iron Man, because we look to those guys as the pillars. But Anthony Mackie can do it, and he's a great enough actor. He's strong enough as a character that he can pull it off. This movie does do that. And it's interesting, too, because it leans really hard into the Incredible Hulk, with the leader showing up. The Abomination was in She-Hulk, so he doesn't really make an appearance because he seems like he's cured. It's a cool movie. I love that, you know, the leader is trying to bait Ross into becoming the Red Hulk.
But yeah, I wish, like, they sold the movie on you already going in knowing that Ross becomes the Red Hulk. And I'm just like, I try to think about having not known that, how much cooler this movie, like how much.
Yeah.
With everything that not interesting that happens, like if that had just surprised me, like that would have been cool.
Yeah.
And that's really also like that plot point is what makes the leader story interesting.
Yes.
So if you didn't know he's like, that's what he was up to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so now you're just watching like, okay, so the leader, we know he's going to make him the Red Hulk. So like, what's the surprise?
Yeah.
But walks around acting like he's got this, you know, mysterious scheme.
Yeah.
But we already know what's going to happen.
A revenge plot against Thunderbolt Ross.
Yeah.
I mean, it's cool that it's not, you know, it's rage induced. And I mean, I think actually the Hulk looks great in this movie. Because they spoil that he's turning into the Red Hulk. And you get to the climax, you go, oh, this is the climax. Him being the Hulk is a climax, but they've kind of spoiled it in the marketing campaign.
Yeah.
And I mean, I get why they did. I know that there's, you know, because the Red Hulk's a popular comic character. And
I love you, buddy. Have a good night.
And having Harrison Ford, I think, is a big get, obviously. Yeah, but it does. It feels like it rushed to get there. There's one thing I didn't understand about, too, the ending, the fight, is why are they shooting him?
I know, right?
I don't understand why
they're... With handguns.
Yeah. And why would you even shoot him anyways?
Yeah.
Because...
They know how a Hulk works at this point.
Yeah, exactly. It's not a secret.
Yeah.
So just try to let Sam try to take care of Hulk. You know, it's an interesting thing. And the whole time I'm watching it, I said, and then they're going to attack him with, you know, Black Hawk helicopters when you know he's just going to break them and cause more damage to the city. No one's learned a lesson.
It's not cool.
No.
It's pretty dumb.
And
it's also very brief. You mm-hmm. know, you wait the whole movie for this. One cool, like the coolest thing in the movie, and it's like over so fast.
And, you know, it's a little anticlimactic where he's just saying, hey,
sun's getting real low.
Yeah. And you're going, okay.
Wish you'd like had a clever trap or something. But I guess like symbolically it's to accentuate because, you know, even though it felt like a lot of this movie was Thunderbolt Ross's story, which is mm-hmm. unfortunate because it should just be Captain America's arc. But his only arc is recycled from the show where he's like, I don't know if I should be Captain America. Like, can I even do this? And it's like, the only interesting thing is maybe he should toy with, like, maybe I should take the serum because I clearly can't fight a Hulk as a human. So like, oh, well, his human power is that he doesn't have to throw fists. He can just, like, talk people down.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well, like, all right.
Because there was some political intrigue, too. You know, I liked the story of the Japanese being double-crossed. And that, you know, the greed of the American political system even superseded what Ross was trying to do. Like, he wasn't aware that people were going behind his back and manipulating him. So there was really cool intrigue there. And, yeah, I don't know.
But I feel like it's diverted by the leader and the Sidewinder stuff.
Yeah.
Like, if it had just been, like... You know, you think the movie sets up that you think that like fighting for the adamantium in the Indian Ocean is going to like be the thing, but it's really just a backdrop for stuff to happen.
Yeah.
It's all about the leader and like pushing Thunderbolt Ross to get angry.
Yeah.
There's adamantium over there. Like that should be the battle between these countries. And Captain America has to find a way to defuse like three adversaries.
Yeah. Because, you know, him defusing the two presidents, I thought would have been really interesting. You know, because they do have that, like, dogfight, which was really cool, where, you know, Cap and Falcon are saying, hey, you know, don't hurt them. Let's try to show them that we're trying to stop this from escalating and how they have to, you know, think about, strategize how they're going to do it. I still enjoyed the movie, and I was actually shocked because Laura went and saw it with me, and, you know, she's not the biggest superhero movie fan, but she'll go see movies with me because I get excited. I mean, I left work. I took Kellen to hockey practice. And I go, hey, let's go see Captain America. And she actually liked it. And which I was shocked because you're right. It's so heavily reliant on knowing what happened in Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
But yeah, the whole Isaiah Bradley thing is just like...
Yeah.
There's so much backstory in that show that you're just like, why is this guy special with this guy in this movie? I felt like the movie should have dug into that more for him because, like, that if the movie's Captain America's movie, like, that's what he cares about in this movie is, like, saving Isaiah Bradley, and he's really just kind of like this pawn for this other thing.
Yeah. Because you eventually learn that the leader is kind of behind this, and, I mean, that's not really a shock to me when you know who the leader is. And like I said, I could tell when they did the reshoots, especially even when he was fighting the Red Hulk and he was talking him down, the shots didn't match.
Oh, yeah. The whole cherry blossom.
Yeah.
Like, when they do that like drone shot of mm-hmm. the whole aftermath, felt very like they just rendered that out.
Yeah.
Really recently.
Is that one? And then the tag scene, the post credit scene, it's literally Sam talking to Ross again. And he says, "You don't even know what you got into." And it's so ambiguous that you don't know what he's talking about.
And it's really, again, like nothing that gets you excited about what's coming mm-hmm. because he kind of has been saying that in the movie already.
Yeah.
So you're just like, oh, you're just repeating yourself?
Yeah, I just don't, I mean, I don't know why. It's interesting because, you know, when you saw Iron Man, no, it was Thor, the tag scene was a trailer for the Avengers, right?
No, it was Loki and Thor. They were standing in like the spaceship.
Which
and
one was
looking
the
out.
Tag for the Avengers? Then was it? Well, was it Thor?
Well, then Thanos drops in, and then it cuts. Like you see Thanos' ship,
mm-hmm.
and that kind of sets up Infinity War.
No, no, I'm talking way before that.
Oh,
to set up the first Avengers movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like I don't know.
It was Thor, right?
I guess it'd have to be because. It was Captain America first.
Thor, then...
Thor, and
then Avengers, right? Am I remembering those right?
I thought they had three movies come out that year, and then... I don't remember.
Because, I just don't know, why didn't they do, like, a tag with the Thunderbolts?
I know, right?
Because Bucky's already in the movie.
Which is weird that he's, like, running for Congress?
Yeah.
I mean, in this day and age, it's not strange for someone with a criminal record to be...
But he's also an assassin, so...
Yeah, and then he's going to be in the Thunderbolts, so it's like...
Yeah.
I guess he's not going to take the job.
Yeah.
So he could probably lead the Thunderbolts, I guess. I don't know. But it seems like Black Widow's sister is going to do it. But anyway.
Yeah. Which is fine. I mean, and I think that movie looks really fun.
But it still felt like having Bucky there just was like, oh, well, we need another like fan service moment to get us through to the next thing. Because they don't really do anything, just like chat for a bit and then.
No. Yeah, it's, you know, and it's hard because you do want, you're so invested in this because it's a 35th movie, I think. So you want it to continue to happen. But you're right. It doesn't feel like.
The setups and payoffs aren't just like that exciting.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, they ran into problems obviously with, because they had, you know, Jonathan Majors, I'm guessing that probably had something to do with it. So you hope they find their footing eventually. So we got it backwards as Thor, then Captain America.
Okay.
And so it was Captain America because remember his tag scene was him punching that, punching bag and he punches it off its hinges and then Nick Fury comes in.
Yeah.
And then they showed a little preview.
Oh, then he walks out into New York Times Square.
Yeah. So, you know, I just don't know why it's almost like they're kind of stumbling over themselves instead of going back. Why did, you know, the original ones work? Because, so you're showing Captain America, it's a standalone movie, you don't have all this baggage, and I get that it's, you know, 14 years ago. But to make it successful, I think you still follow that same, you know, trajectory, because, you know, or you should have put like the Fantastic Four, you
yeah
know?
That's coming out this summer. Yeah,
yeah, just put something in there, you know, where you can even have Sam be as simple as what Nick Fury did at the end of Iron Man. Have him show up at, I don't know, the White Widow place and say, hey, I'm putting together a team, because you know they're eventually going to show up in Avengers Doomsday.
Yeah, but, like, could he be alive? Because this Fantastic Four is, like, set in the 60s,
yeah,
right?
But, yeah, but I'm talking about White Widow is Black Widow's sister. So
oh, okay.
he goes and sees her and says, hey, I'm putting together a team. And then she says, I don't do so well in teams. And then you know, oh, because in Thunderbolts, something happens. Because you know they're going to have to come together to fight Doctor Doom. So you know it's building to something, but... Doomsday, I think, is three movies away.
Yeah.
So.
And I think I know what's coming. It feels very much like the Mirror Universe in Star Trek. I think
you think so?
They're going to bring back all of our favorite people, but as like the evil versions of themselves.
Hmm.
So we'll see.
Yeah, I'm interested to see too. I mean, you obviously you have to have something that gets the Russos excited, because what else do they have to prove? You know.
Yeah.
So it will be interesting. I hope Robert Downey Jr. plays Victor Von Doom, and.
Well, I think he'll play Tony Stark, but it'll be this, like, the mirror version of Tony Stark, who's taken on this mantle of a Victor Von Doom.
Mm.
I don't think he'll... I'm not sure he'll be in, like, the hooded mask thing.
You don't think so? I think that he's so iconic that he's gonna be.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, at least maybe Iron Man but with, the green hood or something.
Or maybe he's killed Victor Von Doom and he's taken his place in his mantle. In that universe.
I mean, yeah, because, I mean, the timeline's all fucked up anyways because of Deadpool and Loki, so...
Yeah.
Who's to say one of Tony Stark's didn't get away, and when he finds out that his... maybe his daughter didn't make it or something, or...
Yeah.
I don't know.
Or Thanos, like... Doctor Strange said, like, all the other universes, like, Thanos won.
Yeah.
So maybe...
Maybe you're right. Maybe there is a universe where... He does win, and, you know, Stark is left behind, and all he can become is an infamous Iron Man. And he says, there is no Iron Man or Tony Stark. There's only Doom. With a twirly mustache or something.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah, I don't know. But what would bring Robert Downey Jr. back? Lots of money? Or do you think it's an actual...
Well, the money, but, like, the chance to play... A villain?
Yeah.
To play that fun of a character, but as a villain part?
Yeah, it's probably really fun.
It's an acting choice that I think is kind of irresistible.
Yeah.
Because you can, like, being this charismatic villain, whereas Thanos was just, like, a pragmatic villain.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Doom's a really cool villain. You know, one of my favorite stories with him is with Spider-Man, and he's causing trouble in New York, but Spider-Man can't do anything because he has diplomatic immunity, you know, like Lethal Weapon 2. And it's just a fun story, so it'll be interesting. But, you know, I was thinking too, so they're shooting Doomsday, I think, in next month, and then they shoot Spidey in June in England. They kind of accidentally spilled that through Tom Holland's charity, where you can get a walk-on role, and like, and we're filming in June, so everyone's, oh, guess we're filming in June. And I think the two, Doomsday and Spider-Man, are going to overlap. And you think, man, it's been 5 years since a Spider-Man movie came out. It doesn't seem like it's that long, but it's that long.
You've been spoiled by having them come out so frequently.
I know. But
there's a stretch where it was 5 years.
Yeah, but it's so huge of a franchise that 5 years is really long.
Yeah, 2021. December. Four. Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't come out till 2026.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So, yeah. So, we'll see. I mean, I'll still see Thunderbolts. I still think that looks like a fun movie. All the characters in it are pretty fun. And they're dealing with a Sentry, which is kind of a Superman kind of villain. You know, the big twist with the Sentry is he's also the bad guy.
I gathered that from the trailer.
Oh, well, in the comic books, he comes as a Sentry, and then there's a bad guy called the Void. And it's really cool. It's really clever. And he's fighting the Void. And then I forget how many issues in that you realize he is the Void as well. So he has two personalities. One's the Sentry and one's the Void. Mm. And he thinks he's fighting the Void, but he's actually not.
He's a schizophrenic.
Yeah. So he's causing problems as the Void, and he doesn't realize that he's doing it. It's pretty cool. I don't know how well that concept will play in movies when you know, the comic book is over 12 issues. We'll see. Yeah. Cool. This is a segment I call What We've Been Watching. Oh, wait. Before we get that, Corinne also sent in her thoughts of Captain America Brave New World.
Hey, nerds. Corinne here for another installment of Showtime, where I tell you all about something cool I've been watching lately. This week, I'm going to give you a twofer, sort of. I'm going to talk about the movie of the week, Captain America Brave New World, and I'm also going to throw in some thoughts about, I watched Brad's recommendation from Filmsplosion, Wicked Little Letters. I'll get that one out of the way first, since it's pretty, I mean, my thoughts on it are pretty short. I watched it like 2 weeks ago. It was a good movie. It kind of started off as like a straight comedy, and then it kind of veered toward like pure drama by the end. I mean, it definitely had some funny moments still, but I would say the drama ramped up more as it went on. And it was good. Yeah. The premise is that it's like post-World War I England, I think, or the UK somewhere. And this Irish lady has recently moved into this, I guess, little English town. And she lives next door to a woman who's played by Olivia Colman. And suddenly Olivia Colman's character just gets like a whole shitload of foul-mouthed letters of, you know, telling her like, oh, you're a stupid slutty bitch, or, you know, whatever. And she and the Irish lady had been friends at one point, and they kind of had a falling out over some misunderstandings. And now the Irish woman is getting accused of sending Olivia Colman's character these letters. And there's kind of this ongoing investigation of, well, is she really the one sending the letters, or is she the one, you know, she's being framed, or what's going on? So, yeah, it's a great movie. I highly recommend it. I watched it with my friend Jerry, and we both enjoyed it. He had, like, I had seen the trailer, at least. We both went into the movie without having seen it. I, at least, had seen the trailer at Filmsplosion. I knew the general premise. But I rented it from, shout out to the library, by the way, because everywhere else I looked that had this movie, it was either you have to pay a shit ton of money to, like, upgrade your Netflix subscription, or you gotta, like, rent it for $4. And I was like, fuck that. You know, I know $4 isn't a ton of money, but I'm like, if I do that every time, it's gonna add up. So, yeah, shout out to the library. I got it for free on there, or I picked it up for free through the library. So, yeah, check your local library if you're interested in streaming movies. Yeah, that's my thought. Anyway, but yeah, he didn't know. I didn't tell him the title, I didn't tell him the premise, nothing like that. I was just like, this is a movie from the UK, and I think that, and it's rated R. That's pretty much all I told him. It's rated R for language, and there's a couple of, like, suggestive scenes in there, but yeah, it's mostly language. So yeah, we had fun. Yeah, good movie. I highly recommend it. It might have made my Filmsplosion list if I had seen it before we did Filmsplosion. Because you know me, I'm into, like, UK movies, period drama movies. Like, that's my shit. So it's kind of funny that Brad, of all people, had it on his list and I didn't. So, yeah, shout out to Brad. Thanks for the recommendation, even if it was indirect. But so, on to Captain America, Brave New World. Ryan's gonna get mad at me, but I saw a bunch of spoilers about the movie before I went and saw it. I didn't get to see it until the Sunday of the opening weekend. So yeah, of course, I come across spoilers, and I mean, kind of already sort of knew some of the things. I mean, Red Hulk was in all the trailers, and there were a couple of other things. It's like, you know, like, XYZ is gonna happen or not gonna happen. I don't know. Part of me is frustrated with the MCU because I really don't feel like there's a lot at stake anymore. You snapped half of the universe away for 5 years. I don't know how you can top that. And we have had characters die. Like, main characters, you know, Iron Man died. Although now they're going to bring Robert Downey Jr. back as Doom, apparently. And then, you know, Black Widow died. So, you know, there can still be stakes, but it's like, come on. You know they're not going to kill anybody off. Shoot, it's like, especially now that they kind of don't have, like, a main lineup anymore. Oh my gosh, we could have, like, a whole conversation about, like, the state of the MCU, and, like, just focusing on Captain America Brave New World. It was fine. I would probably put it on the same level as Thor Love and Thunder. I would maybe put it slightly above that, because I thought Thor Love and Thunder had some good ideas, but the execution was terrible. Whereas, I thought that it was almost the opposite for Captain America Brave New World. Like, the ideas were kind of hit and miss, but I thought the execution was mostly okay. Honestly, my three favorite scenes in the movie were all just Sam sitting down and talking to people. My favorite, okay, spoilers for Captain America, Brave New World. My favorite scene in the whole movie was him when he goes to see Isaiah in the prison, and Isaiah is, like, you know, he's like breaking down. Like, shout out to the actor who plays Isaiah, because I think he was the best in the whole movie. And then everybody else was a little, like, some scenes I thought they were bringing it, other scenes I thought they were just kind of, I don't know. They just felt like they were just going through the motions or something. Like, Harrison Ford seemed to especially kind of be hit and miss. But anyway, the guy who was playing Isaiah, he did a fantastic job. Every scene was, like, totally knocked it out of the park. But especially the scene in the prison cell, or when Sam goes to visit him in the prison, and Isaiah's just, like, breaking down. He's like, I can't be in prison again. And telling Isaiah, or telling Sam, like, don't, you know, don't help me, or whatever he said. I don't remember. I also like the scene of Sam talking to Bucky, although I really got frustrated. Like, Bucky had such a good line about how Sam aspires or inspires people because he didn't take the serum. And then they immediately undercut it with the joke. It's like, oh, great. You couldn't even let the moment land. And then I also liked the scene of Sam going to visit Joaquin in the hospital. So, yeah. I think I had heard from some people before the movie that the action scenes were a little wonky and just not very well done. And I can definitely, I agree with that statement. The opening action scene I thought was probably the worst. The aerial battle around the Celestial Island was okay. And the Hulk fight was, the one upside of the Hulk fight was it was pretty short. So, I don't know. I guess I never saw The Incredible Hulk. I only ever knew Thunderbolt Ross from Captain America Civil War. And, bro, that was almost 10 years ago. They keep referring to these things, I'm like, and I'm like, I don't remember that. That was 10 years ago. It's just like, why is it taking so long to circle back to these things? Even the Celestial Island, that was 3 years ago. That was, I think, 2021? Okay, so almost 4 years ago. But, oh my gosh. Yeah, so. And then, I mean, I really liked it when they leaned into the angle of Sam talking to his fellow military veteran folks and really, like, trying to, you know, leaning into his background as, like, a counselor and everything like that. Like, that was great. Action scenes were meh. Plot was meh. I think Tim Blake Nelson is his name, the guy who plays the evil scientist dude. I thought he did okay. It was maybe a little hammy, but I mean, he definitely felt like a threat. Like, that, yeah, that was another scene where it's like he just randomly shoots this admiral and his wife, and it's like, why? We never circled back on that, did we? That must have been a remnant of some plot line that got cut. And it's like, oh, he just goes to their house and shoots them, and that was it. Like, we never found out what their connection was, or at least I don't think we did. I don't know. The movie felt wonky, and I'm glad that a lot of people liked it. It actually got a higher audience score than I would have figured, but I wonder if part of that is people just wanted to see a superhero movie, and I don't blame them, because we have gone almost a year and a half, and I think we only had one superhero movie, and that was Deadpool and Wolverine in that time. So I think people do want to see these, like, mainline Marvel movies again. And so, you know, that was partly why, you know, there's so much excitement and people were excited to see Sam as Captain America and blah, blah, blah. But I do wonder what it's going to feel like, what the second weekend of the box office is going to be if it drops dramatically because people were like, you know, one and done, only saw it the one time, only needed to see it the one time. Because, you know, they didn't want to miss out, or they're just curious, and that's, you know, like me, that they just thought it was okay. And they don't need to see it again. But yeah, I'm curious to see what the second weekend box office numbers are going to look like. And I'm also curious if it's going to hold up on rewatch. Not for me, but for other people. If they'll think, like, oh, it's even better. Oh, it's worse on, or it's about the same on second viewing. Because for me, since I knew so many of the spoilers going into it, it was kind of like a second viewing in some respects, but yeah, that's maybe why I didn't like it as much, because I had so many, I really wish they had not spoiled the Red Hulk stuff in the trailers or in the merchandising, marketing, you know, if they had saved that reveal for the movie, I think it would have landed a lot better. But of course, everybody knew, oh, like, I don't know. I almost thought it was going to be reversed because I knew there was an aerial battle and I knew that it was, there was going to be the Red Hulk fight. I thought we were going to do the Red Hulk fight first. Then we were going to do the aerial battle at the very end. Like, that was going to be the big showstopper set piece. And it was the other way around. So, yeah. I kind of wish they had saved the aerial battle for the end. And maybe the Red Hulk could have come out and he could have been, like, that one Hulk scene. I think he's in the Avengers where he's just flying around and, like, smacking down all the little, like, Chitauri, little, like, air chariot things. He's just, like, bouncing from one to the other. Like, that would have been kind of cool, but... yeah. There are other little things that irked me. You know, like, that phrase, death by a thousand cuts? This felt like mediocre by a thousand weird things in the movie. There were some effects that didn't hold up. I felt like sound mixing was off a couple times. Anytime that Sam and or Joaquin were out, like, jumping, you know, flying into the air, the way they took off felt so weird to me. Like, there wasn't enough kick to it. Like, they just took off like Superman. And I'm like, they have jetpacks and shit on. Why aren't they, like, why isn't there some kind of a poosh or, you know, like a noticeable, like, you know, increase of speed. And it was just like, they just took off. I don't know how to explain it without showing it to you, but it just felt weird to me. Like, there wasn't really weight to it, both in a physical sense and in a metaphorical sense. And I don't know if that was on the sound design or the effects or both. But yeah, anytime they took off, it felt weird to me. Same thing when they landed, but maybe not to as much of a degree. But yeah. Yeah, there are a lot of little things that just kind of added up across the movie that it's like, oh, like Giancarlo Esposito's character is only in like 3 scenes. He's got a pretty prominent place on the poster, but okay. And the one Black Widow character, I don't remember her name, but she was so short. She looked like she was about 5'6", or no, sorry, not 5'6", 4'6", like, she was so short, and she's taking down, like, 300-pound dudes. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it's very improbable, and it's like, could you get a slightly taller, slightly bulkier actress to play this role? Someone who's a little bit more believable is somebody who could take out, you know, trained commandos. But yeah, she was so short, I thought she was, like, a little person for a second there. Like, the way she looked next to Harrison Ford seated was maybe, like, I don't know, half a foot shorter than she was standing. Yeah, it was weird. Anyway, I've rambled long enough, but those are my thoughts, so.
Hey, nerds, it's Corinne from a few days after I initially recorded this, but I just wanted to follow up with some few tiny observations that I had in addition to the ones I already said. I realized, I was like, why does Isaiah Bradley, like, look and sound so familiar? And I did watch Falcon and the Winter Soldier, but it's been a really long time. But I remember at the time hearing the name Carl Lumley, and I was like, why does that name sound so familiar? And I looked it up. He is the same actor who voices Geoff Jones, a.k.a. Martian Manhunter, in Justice League and Justice League Unlimited, a.k.a. the DCAU. So I'm like, yeah, no wonder. I was like, yeah, Isaiah Bradley, like, he can do no wrong. He's like, I've never done anything wrong in my life. And I'm like, I know this and I love you. You know, the Parks and Rec meme. But yeah, so no wonder. I was like, yeah, Isaiah Bradley is probably my favorite character in the whole movie. And I'm like, well, now I know why. It's because I have a connection to that actor and to his previous work. So yeah, he really can do no wrong. Yeah, Carl Lumley should be in more things, but... yeah, it's been a week now as I'm recording this. It's been a week since I've seen the movie, and I still don't have, like, a good impression of it. I still have no desire to see it again. And unfortunately, I think that's the case with a lot of Marvel projects right now. It just kind of feels like homework. Like, you're just watching it to check off a box. At least I am. I know a lot of people are, but You know, I'm happy for the people who liked the movie, and I liked parts of it. I'm not saying it was like the worst movie of all time. I liked parts of it, but that doesn't mean I have a desire to really see it again. Sorry. I am kind of looking forward to Thunderbolts in May, and I'm looking forward to Fantastic Four. So I think that of the three movies that were coming out this year, this was probably the weakest one of the lineup, at least as far as my preferences were concerned. Because I like Sam Wilson, and I like him as Captain America, but I did not give a shit about anything else that was going on in this movie, except for the whole Isaiah Bradley drama. But I'm like, we could have had that whole plot line with just anybody else. Like Ross did not need to be president for that to happen. But anyway. All right, I will talk to you guys next time about something. Don't know what. But until then, keep it real, nerds. Bye.
Wow, thanks, Corinne. I still never understand why I don't get mad. But Brad, do I really get mad? Like, I'm not a mad person. Maybe angry.
If I agree with you, you won't hit me.
But Brad, here's the secret. I'm always angry.
That's a callback to this episode.
Yeah. I always love how people preface it with, "It's going to make Ryan mad." I just don't understand wanting to know spoilers before you see something. That's something that does not compute with me. Does it compute with you, Brad?
Yeah, I like to be surprised in movies.
We literally just talked about how we wished the Red Hulk wasn't spoiled.
Yeah.
Or they could still have done the poster with Cap blocking the fist with the Red Hulk's arm. And yeah, comic book people says, oh, that's probably Thunderbolt Ross. But it'd still be a mystery. And then when he changes at the end, you're like, oh, shit, it's because he's pissed off and red means rage.
Or what if they sold the movie making you think Thunderbolt Ross was going to change, and then you watch the movie and it turned out to be someone else?
Yeah.
Deviating from comics?
Because it was even interesting when, you know, I forgot to talk about this in our review of it because we kind of got sidetracked, but how that SEAL Team 6 people were, you know, killed and stuff, because it was kind of sad. Like, these guys are working really hard to keep America safe and help Captain America and all this other stuff, and then they're just killed. And so there is some cool stuff there. That Corinne doesn't like the movie, I'm not surprised, because she doesn't like anything. I think that's like her bag, is, I don't like this. Why? I don't know. I just don't. But she also saw your film Splosion.
Yeah, Wicked Little Letters.
Which is, it was a fun little trailer, so it's the one I've definitely marked to watch. So thanks for sending that in, Corinne, as always. And I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed. I never got that. Every time she tells me that, my head wants to explode. I don't understand.
Ryan, you're turning red. The sun's getting real low.
For those of you who can't see, I grabbed my couch really hard with my hand, like, is crushing it. I'll never understand that. So I don't know why you'd seek out trying to figure out what's going on. I don't understand. Knowing makes it a better viewing experience, and she's never been able to articulate it to me, so I'm going to keep on goading her into actually being to articulate it to me and telling her that what she believes is stupid, and that if she actually wants to defend herself, then she can do it in a better way than just because she likes to know what happens. You hear that, Corinne? I'm laying down the gauntlet. I'm laying it down. Do you think she'll take the bait?
No.
Fuck. Hey, what'd you watch this week, Brad?
So, yeah, this is the stuff we've been watching.
Quite a few things, but I'll just focus on... I found a movie streaming. So when I was trying to find movies for our VHSs for our booth a couple years ago, when I was at Goodwill or ARC thrift store, I found a movie I'd never heard of on VHS called Switching Channels, starring Burt Reynolds, Christopher Reeve, and who is the Kathleen Turner.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Never heard of it.
I've never heard of it either.
But it looked interesting. It's like a comedy taking place at like a television network, news network. But I didn't pick it up. And then I found it on streaming this month. And there's probably a reason we haven't heard of it before. But there was Christopher Reeve, his character has a fear of riding elevators. And so he has this freak out performance in the elevator that he has to take that is so batshit unhinged.
That you respect it?
That I respect it. It's like something that Conan O'Brien would like clip out and like put on and repeat over and over again, because it's so bizarre to watch him do that. And then the other thing was in the finale. So the movie revolves around like Kathleen Turner was married to Burt Reynolds, and she's a anchor and he's like the network guy. They divorced, and now she goes off and she has like a breakdown on air, and then gets forced into a vacation. She goes on vacation, meets Christopher Reeve, who's like some rich dude, manufacturing dude. And they come back to the station to say like, hey, we're getting married, and she's quitting. And then Burt Reynolds tries to like sneakily find ways to break them up so he can get her back. And then meanwhile, there's this mystery. There's a guy on death row who may be innocent. So she's trying to leave her job, but Burt Reynolds is trying to keep her attached to this one story so he can keep her. And then Reeves is just stuck in the middle of it all. But in the end, it kind of becomes like this madcap slapstick finale, where this one woman in the office ends up getting pushed out a window in this office. She on her way down, she hits her head on the lamp in the lobby, and then she lands like face first into a rolling desk chair that then rolls down a flight of stairs. yeah, it's hilarious. and just like woke me up from this like snoozer of a movie. So yeah. Switching channels. come for Christopher Reeve's freak out performance. Stay for the
woman
stunt lady getting her shit rocked.
Love it.
In a crazy stunt. And then I'll save everything else for next week. Oh no. One thing, and speaking of things I've been trying to watch for a while, if you've ever watched the Ninja Turtles 2 VHS, there's a trailer for a movie called Step Kids before the movie.
This.
I forget what the band is, but it's like Ferris Bueller. There's this teen girl. She's talking to the camera, talking about her Wild Step family that includes like Griffin Dunn and David Strathairn.
Now it's coming back to me.
Yeah. This is my brother, Chet. He's a real scientist, or he's a jerk. And so, apparently sometime after that trailer was on that VHS and when it, I don't know if it ever went to theaters, that actually they renamed it and called it Big Girls Don't Cry.
Oh.
Worst title.
That is horrible.
So,
is a song in it?
No.
Why wouldn't they call it that? Why do they call it that?
I don't know.
No?
I don't know. Yes. Step Kids makes way more sense for what this movie is. She's got like this huge extended family. And the parents she has right now want to go on this vacation. And then she does something that like upsets everybody. It's kind of like Home Alone, where she pisses everyone off. But
sounds about right for the timing, though.
Yeah, that's why it probably got greenlit. They're like, "Oh, this looks Home Alone. Like people like this." But it's really just kind of flat and boring. She has a tantrum. She runs off in the woods, and then the family comes together to try and find her. She falls in with like another family who's camping. She pretends like her family's dead and stuff. There's not really any funny lines that much, and. It's all just takes place like in the wood, like on a campground, like Friday 13th or whatever. There's just not really anything interesting that happens, you know? Yeah. Again, it's like, you know, Home Alone has like slapstick and funny lines, and this is just like, oh yeah, she's a brooding teenager, and her stepbrother is like the coolest guy, and he's the one that she can confide in, and he's like estranged from her. Their dad, and so like he kind of gives her an incentive to run away and stuff, but he doesn't. He kind of stays with everyone else, but anyway, yeah, it's just kind of flat and boring. Ultimately it's kind of a downer of like, I've built this movie up in my head for years, and it's just like, I kind of just want to turn it off.
It's like the Wright Field commercial, you know, it's
the
from Ninja Turtles. It's the Pizza Hut commercial.
No, that's cool and fun. This is just like, I don't know. The trailer is so much better than the movie. So, yeah, that's why I watched this movie.
Brad, you and I are doing a Turtles rewatch. And I just want to tease people that I have watched the first episode now, and I have made notes.
Yeah.
And you know what our first pizza we have to eat is?
One of those in this episode, right?
Yeah, it's pepperoni and ice cream. There's like five or six pizzas.
Yeah.
And I was trying to write them all down, and I couldn't get through them all.
Yeah. Don't worry. I watched it four or five times. So.
Oh, nice.
What's the
one that April has at the end? It's like a weird one, too.
Well, I don't remember the pizzas, but yeah, there's like five or six that are going to like hold us over for several episodes.
Yeah. So that in case there's an episode that doesn't have one.
Yeah.
The first one, they literally, when they meet April, they list off like three or four pizzas. And then I think there's two at the end.
Yeah. There's something with the anchovies.
So yeah. So stay tuned for that. Hopefully we'll record that soon. For those who don't know, Brad and I are going to be rewatching every episode of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 1987 cartoon.
I've also entered into season three. And I'm just like, oh, man. This is going to get tough.
Yeah, that's what makes it fun. So I, this week, I watched Sleeping Beauty, which is a Walt Disney classic. I only bring it up because what's really cool is I have this new fancy TV, and it's a OLED crystal, whatever Samsung highest end you can get.
Doesn't run Hulu though.
I know. Crashed today. What the fuck? Anyways, my wife, you know, she always teases me, says, why do you need a TV that big? Why does it need to look that nice? And so I put the Sleeping Beauty 4K on, and she's watching it. She says, this movie is stunning on this TV. I said, yeah, because it can display all the colors, and it's not hindered, and the refresh rate is so high that even when you turn off the, it doesn't even really have it. Like, the old TVs have that automatic smoothing. This default setting is how it's supposed to be. So it's pretty nice, and Sleeping Beauty looked incredible on it. So I just like to score points with that, because my wife admitted defeat. That she says, oh, I get why these TVs are awesome. I also watched this, I totally blind bought it, because it's this cartoon called Wait Till Your Father Gets Home, and it's from Hanna-Barbera, and it's, when I was reading a description of it, they said the show's really funny, and it's kind of a precursor to The Simpsons. And so I says, oh, I have to watch this. And it's a really fascinating show because the backgrounds are really minimalistic and it has like a nice 60s vibe to it. But it's really funny and, I mean, kind of inappropriate for audiences now. So in it, it's about a dad who has three children. He has an overweight daughter who is always trying to lose weight. He has a son who's like a surfer hippie dude, but his daughter is also a feminist. So she always is doing these marches and all these things. And then they have the little, rapscallion, you know, youngest son who's always getting in trouble and, causing problems.
It sounds like the Griffin kids.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, it kind of is. You know, I bet Seth MacFarlane was proud. Well, he started to work at Hanna-Barbera, so maybe he was influenced by it. But, well, the dad isn't as stupid as Peter, though. but the dad is, you know, he works 9 to 5, and it's pretty funny. And his neighbor is this super racist guy. The first episode, when you first meet the neighbor, is how he wants them to vote against letting a Jewish person into their like club. It's basically like the water buffaloes from the Flintstones. And you know, the dad in it, he says, no, he can be in our club, it's not a big deal. And he says, I don't know if I want Jews in this club. I go, whoa. I mean, it's so yeah, but it's still funny because that guy kind of gets his throughout the first season. He's constantly called out for being, you know, who he is. But it's kind of a fun little show. I was pleasantly surprised about how fun it is to watch it. And I'm a big proponent of, you know, supporting physical media. And when I read about this, they put out the DVD of the first season. They never released the second season because the first season didn't sell that well. In fact, before this Blu-ray came out, because I was just looking up stuff, I think the first season of it was selling for over $100 because it's so, like, wasn't popular. No one got it. And it came in those really cool Hanna-Barbera ones where it was, like, the black TV from the 60s, and it had, it was clear. It was really cool, good looking. But But they remastered all the episodes. They all look great. The song is fun. So yeah, it's definitely something that I was pleasantly surprised watching. And when stuff is, you know, only 20 minutes long, it's pretty easy to just get wrapped up into watching it. And so I had a lot of fun with that. And the last thing I watched was Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man ended its first season on Disney Plus, and it was really good. They really explore Peter Parker, what it means to become Spider-Man. It sets up, it's actually really cool. Did you watch the series?
I've just seen the ads because Ninja Turtles. Yeah,
yeah. The animation's really cool. It looks like it's Steve Ditko mixed with John Romita. But they explain a lot in the last episode, and it has this kind of cool time loop in it. Yeah, you should watch it. It's really good. And there's a couple episodes where Spider-Man's not even really in it. It's more of Peter Parker and, his supporting characters. One of his friends in the first couple episodes is Tombstone, before he's Tombstone. And the last episode teases him turning into the Tombstone. He gets hit with this chemical and his skin starts having like white splotches on it. Because if anybody knows, Lonnie Lincoln in the Spider-Man comics is an African-American boy, and he was made fun of because he was an albino. And that made him have skin as hard as a tombstone, and he became a crime boss. This cartoon takes it a different way, and it's really interesting. In this, he's a... like an all-star jock and gets great grades, and he gets into the gang because his younger brother is messing up. So he trades places with his younger brother, and the evolution of his character is really cool. So yeah, I should check it out. I think all episodes are streaming, and make sure you watch Harley Quinn. They did an episode with Brainiac that is really heartbreaking. The Harley Quinn did an episode 2 with Batman's origin that was so great that kind of slipped under the radar, because, you know, Harleen Quinzel is a psychiatrist, and she goes into Batman's brain and it explains why he's always brooding and why he's depressed. And it's basically that he relives his parents being murdered and over every night, and it gives him trauma, and it's really great. And how she talks, because as she's in his head, she realizes that she's talking to a little boy, and this little boy is constantly seeing his parents murdered, and that fuels who the Batman is, and it's awesome. And then the latest one, it deals with Brainiac's origin, which, you know, Brainiac in DC Comics is this all-knowing being, android, and it starts off as this comedy, like the sitcom with him and his wife and his kid with the Brainiac. And they say really funny things, you know, you need to eat all your battery chips or computer chips. I forget exactly what it is, but how his job is to go to different planets and make them perfect. And, how he loses that and how he becomes a victim of his own traumatic experiences, and how he, doesn't realize what he's doing. It's really hard to explain because it takes place over a couple episodes, but how they pull it off is chef kisses. It's one of the best shows on TV. And I'll say that continuously. And I watch a shit ton of TV stuff. That's what I watched this week.
Cool.
Next week we are seeing The Monkey. That will be a lot of fun. So stay tuned for that. Yeah, until next time, we'll see you at the movies.
Well, a real nerd knows who shot a real nerd. Can follow the plot of a real nerd. We'll give it all the gods. Lights, camera, action.
Thanks for listening to Real Nerds Podcast, a Nebulous Visions production. Stream or download episodes, read articles at realnerdspodcast.com. Stream us on Apple or Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or iHeartRadio. Follow us on Facebook, Real Nerds Podcast, Twitter and Instagram, @RealNerds.
Watch us on YouTube, Real Nerds Podcast. Email us at realnerds@gmail.com. Call us at 720-6NERDS5. Thank you to Sparks Mandrill, Mike at Plan 9 Studios, and Bolognium for all of our groovy theme songs. And that's how you fucking do it.